Hi, this is Gideon Rothstein. This is a responsible day for the 29th day of Shavat. And today we're going to look at Shut Mishpat Kohen, responsible number 125, dated the 29th of Shavat of Tov Reish Ayin Chet of 1918. So I think this is the period of time when Rav Kook is stuck in London during World War I. And the question comes from a question from a Rav in London. I think it's about the setting up of a new Jewish community, or a new shul in the West End of London. Man, his name is Tzvi Ferber. He is, and if I can find him online, he is the Abbasin, the head of a shul in the Ma'arav in London, in the West End of London. And the question is about when you are or aren't allowed to set up new shuls or new communities, or have separate shuls and separate communities within one town. And the reason is there's a prohibition in the Torah called Lo Tidgodidu. So in the course of this discussion, Rav Kook is going to deal with several issues about Lo Tidgodidu. We're not going to get into all of them to the full extent that he does. But the fundamental question is, Lo Tidgodidu, in its most literal meaning, clearly is about the fact that one is not allowed to tear at one's skin, to tear streaks in one's skin or one's flesh as mourning for somebody who has passed away. So that's Lo Tidgodidu in its most literal sense. But the Gemara understood it to include as well, and we're going to talk about in the end of this responsum what we mean by include as well and how it got included as well. The Gemara understood it to include as well not tearing, as it were, divisions, or not rending the Jewish people, not having different segments of the Jewish people. And then the question always becomes, what qualifies a different segment of the Jewish people? Today, we are so comfortable with people doing different things that we don't even perhaps recognize that there is such a prohibition. There is clearly a prohibition of Lo Tidgodidu, which was understood by Chazal to be a biblical prohibition, which involved Jews doing separate things from each other. The standards of that are very complicated, and we'll see some of them in this response, and it'll show why it can be so, it become irrelevant to things that we do that you might even forget that there is such a prohibition. Let's also stop and pause. Remember to thank Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, David Hachhauser, and the OU for their help with these shiurim and making them available to you. So, back to our tshuva, already in progress, as it were. The Rav Kook is talking about the inyan of Lo Tidgodidu. He says, "Eino ki'im al derech shinui b'ho ra'ah." It's not, Rav Kook says, it's not the establishing of a new shul or a new beit din, right? The phrasing of the Gemara has to do with a beit din, with a rabbinic court. I think the theory is that any community will have a new rabbinic court of its own, and therefore that's a good fundamental way to talk about it. But Rav Kook is saying the issue isn't even the having of a new court. It's not lo ayisud beit din, it's not making a new court. It's that the new court is going to rule on certain issues. Now we'll talk about the fact that it has to be ruling on issues, that to rule on certain issues in a different way. So Rav Kook says, we've never found that the prohibition is to have another court, because if the courts are all going to be ruling the same way, what do I give this another court? That other court is going to be helping out by, I don't know, taking some of the slack from the court and making sure that people can have justices to find if they have a court case. So the issue isn't that there is another court. The issue is that the court does something different than the first court. Rav Kook points out that in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, Yerushalayim had several batei din. We know this because when we talk about in the Gemara about going from court to court, if you're going to have to go to a higher court for a better justice, so it talks about the different courts you had in Yerushalayim that people had the option of going to. He points out that the Gemara has a question, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara in Yevamot about whether Beit Shammai acted on their rulings or not. There's no question about that in terms of these kinds of issues. But Rav Kook points out, see, nobody has the question of, could Beit Shammai establish a Beit Shammai? That there was a Beit Shammai as opposed to a Beit Hillel didn't bother anybody, he's saying. And yet they were like, they had their own ideas, and they had their own rulings. So the answer is, the question is, whether or not they ruled that way in practice. If they didn't rule that way in practice, everybody understands why you could have a Beit Shammai and a Beit Hillel. The question is, only becomes an issue if you're going to have two different groups of people acting differently in terms of their Judaism. So Rav Kook says, generally says, so your whole pilpul that you sent me, which we obviously don't have in these responses, your whole discussion about Lo Tidgodidu is only if it ever turns out that we end up ruling differently on a halakhic question. We're going to get to the definition of halakhic questions in the course of this tshuva, but that's already a very big step to notice both sides of it. I think today people don't remember sometimes that there is a prohibition of Lo Tidgodidu. Prohibition of Lo Tidgodidu is that you're not allowed to have separate groups of Jews acting differently within the Torah. The Torah cannot seem to be two Torahs. It cannot seem to be two different religions to people. That's a problem Lo Tidgodidu. The other side of it, though, is there's only a chiluk beho ra'ah. If we're going to be ruling on some issue, and that's where we're going to separate. If we don't have a ruling on an issue, then we're not going to separate. So the fact that you could walk into a yeshiva Beit Shammai, and they would say, We think theoretically this is the halacha, and this is the halacha, and this is the halacha. But in practice, we've gone to the Sanhedrin, we had a vote, and the winning halachos were this, and this is, that's what we do. That real quick says no problem. So setting up a new shul in London and a new community with a new Beit Din is not an issue at all, says Rav Kook, until and unless it comes to different horan. That's an important question for our times today. I think you have both sides. You have people who have set up different groups and there are different horan, and they say, no, we can follow halacha this way. That's a problem you go to do if it hasn't existed before. And then you have the other way around. You have people who resist setting up something new, which is not going to differ in a whole ra'ah, and the Rav Kook is saying there's no problem there. Now, Rav Kook recognizes that that what he just said is not quite so clear in all the Rishonim. The Rambam, for example, seems to think that you can have a whole second Beit Din in a city, even if it's going to rule differently, as long as it's a separate Beit Din. As soon as you have different Beit Din, it's only within a Beit Din. He seems to rule like Rav in the Gemara. We're not going to get into the details of the Gemara, but he seems to rule. So Rav Kook suggests that the Rambam really thought that you could have two Beit Din in a city and rule differently, which he just a second ago said you couldn't do. He thought that maybe the Rambam only meant that in a situation where Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, the way the Gemara presents them, each of them had an advantage over the other in terms of Psak Halacha. Beit Shammai was brighter. The word in the Gemara is mechadaditve. They're sharper. So I don't know if that's meant. Well, I don't think it's probably not meant to imply a quality of intellect so much as a quality of insight and ability to recognize the halacha better. So they were seen as being mechadaditve, sharper. But Beit Hillel were the rove, were the majority. So each one of them had an advantage because we generally say achari rabbi latodes. We'll get to in this shuvah as well. We get to you follow the majority. But Beit Shammai might have had or seem to have had a better insight into halacha in some ways, and therefore you would have thought maybe we'd follow them. So the Rav Kook thinks that's the reason that the Rambam accepted the idea that you could have two Beit Din in one city, is if each Beit Din has some significant advantage. Now, of course, if you want to apply that in our times today, everybody's going to think that their Beit Din has some significant advantage. So that's Rambam's view. That's the Rav Kook's reading of Rambam's view, that you could have two Beit Din in a city because each has their own advantage. But there are other opinions as well. Rav Hai Gaon, for example, seems to think that even in our times, they can you can follow anybody. It's not just Beit Shammai. If you think that somebody has a better opinion, has a better explanation of what the halacha should be, you can rule that way. And therefore, you'd have two Beit Din in a city because one group of people might understand or accept or believe that one set of rulings is more correct, and the other might think the other set of rulings is more correct. Rav Kook seems to think that Rav Hai Gaon thought that that would be okay, whereas the Ramban thinks that once the Gemara said the halacha is like Beit Hillel, then that also includes in it the halacha that we follow the rove, and therefore it can't be a two Beit Din situation because in each Beit Din you should be following the majority, and you should not have, and you'll have a lot to go to do problem if you have separate rulings. And then he goes on to think that the Rif and the Rush might agree with the Rav Hai Gaon. Basically, he thinks that there's groups of Rishonim who think that even today, following the wiser view, or the view that seems sharper and clearer, is acceptable. And then there are views today, and then there are other views, which seems to the Rambam and the Ramban, who think that when the Bat Kol decided, or when it became decided that Beit Hillel was who we follow, that it brought with it also the idea that we always follow the majority, and then it should be that even within one city, you have a lot to go to do issue because you just follow the majority, and that's the way the ruling should apply for the entire city. So in any case, while there's a difference of opinion about whether you could theoretically have, plausibly have, two Beit Din in a city today, in the Rav Kook's reading, where you have Rambam and Ramban, who think there's a majority rule issue, and majority rule is the only standard, therefore there shouldn't be two Beit Din ruling separately from each other and differently than each other in a city, or you have the Rif and the Rav Hai Gaon and the Rush in the Rav Kook's reading, who hold that Mechad Deitvei is still a standard. If one group is brighter, wiser than the other group, they have the right to rule their way, whereas the majority has the right to rule their way, and then as long as they're in separate Beit Din in a city, that could be okay, and that's where you could have two different Beit Din. The two Beit Din of the two courts in the city really are just all the same. There's nothing differentiating one from the other, and they're going to rule differently. Rav Kook thinks that everybody agrees that's a problem. The Rambam and the Ramban will think it's a problem because they think it's always a problem to have two Beit Din in the city because they think that the ruling like Beit Hillel and the Gemara brought with it also the idea that the only standard is majority, and that's the standard we go by. So they would certainly hold the two Beit Din in a city, two courts in a city ruling separately from each other would be a problem. Rav Hai Gaon and Rif and Rush would agree that unless one of the Beit Din has some clear advantage over the other in terms of wisdom or something like sharpness in halakha, that they would not be allowed to rule differently because then they have no basis for doing so, and the answer should be majority rule. So that would be true. If in London you have no thing that makes the second Beit Din any different than the other one, and it's going to rule differently, Rav Kook seems to think that that would be a problem. And then he applies it to the whole Behil Beit Shammai question. If you look in the Gemara, it seems in some Gemaras like, and it goes like the reason that we follow Beit Hillel is because of a bat kol, because the heavenly voice came out and said, "Oh, you should certainly follow Beit Hillel." Except that famously, Rabbi Yehoshua said in that situation, "In mashgichim bat kol, we don't follow a bat kol." So then the question becomes, what does that mean? So it could be, Rav Kook says, that the Rif and the Rosh think, as the Tosfot Yevamot said, the Rav Yehoshua said, we don't follow a bat kol. He didn't mean we never follow a bat kol. He meant you can't follow a bat kol if one side has clearly got an advantage over the other side, either with a rover or a sharpness. So in the Beit Shammai Beit Hillel question, a bat kol couldn't have worked. And therefore, it had to be, he'll say, that the bat kol was only ruling on that particular halachic issue. And on a particular halachic issue, Rif and Rosh felt that a bat kol could decide a doubtful situation. So that would mean that the bat kol was only for that issue, and it doesn't tell you anything about what's going on further, and therefore the standards of sharpness and or as opposed to majority continue as issues in halacha and continue to be valid standards to work on, either of them being valid standards to work on. But the Rambam is very clear in Hilchos Yesodei Torah that he doesn't believe this bat kol issue, and that's one way. It's also a plausible way to read the Gemara, which is not our issue right now, but it's not clear in the Gemara. After all, Rabbi Yehoshua does say ein mashgichin bat kol, and the Gemara seems very clearly to rule that way. So that's in some ways maybe even the easier way to rule about it. You have a bat kol, and the answer is we say, yeah, we don't listen to the bat kol when it comes to halacha. If you're going to rule that way, then it means that when the standard became that we always follow Beit Hillel, it wasn't because of the bat kol. Couldn't have been, according to the Rambam. And yet, we follow that way, it must be, says Rav Kook, that because we were passing, when the Torah says, Achari Rabim Lahatot, when the Torah says you should follow the majority, it didn't only mean, this is what we're understanding to mean, it didn't only mean when you have a debate within a Beit Din, that in that one court you should follow the majority. It meant, in general, the standard of majority is the more important standard over Mechadadeh, and that over being sharp, and that's the standard that we follow. And that all that prophets can do is talk about things that are not a matter of halacha, or within a matter of halacha, a prophet, like a Beit Din, can do a hora'at sha'ah. They can make a temporary rule or a temporary abrogation of a rule, or they can give tochacha, they can give admission. If that's so, then when we say that we follow Beit Hillel, as I said a second ago, it meant that there was a rejection by the sages of the time of the standard of mechadadeh tefeah, the standard of sharpness. The fact that there are seven sharp people and 30 less sharp, I mean, 30 well-qualified Torah scholars, but less sharp than the seven, and the seven hold something, that's not going to be good enough. So that's the way the Rambam is understanding it, and that leads to all the things we've said again that I'm not going to repeat. Now, we've said on other occasions, and Rav Kook quotes it as well, the Sefer Get Pashas, one of the people who said it, that we don't say the majority rules unless that majority sat together. So that's why in halacha in general you can say, well, I understand if I find seven, you know, Rav Ovadia Yosef, for example, I think was somebody who very much thought like majority still rule. He was just quote unquote, and basically if the majority held one way, he would try to follow it. But the Get Pashut and others had said that, not in response to Rav Ovadia Yosef, they just said it, that said that this whole idea of majority rules only applies to the majority had a chance to talk it out. So Rav Kook says, so you might think that if you have two courts and they're not sitting together, the court in the far end doesn't have to worry about majority rule because they're not part of that discussion. So he says that may not be true. He doesn't really rule on that question, but he says, but in the Lotit Godudu issue, he doesn't think it makes sense. It's relevant. Lotit Godudu isn't once you've heard what the other people think, then you have to follow. Lotit Godudu is within a Jewish community, and basically he thinks it's a city-defined Jewish community you shouldn't be having. Now, nowadays, for reasons we'll still get to right now, but nowadays you have so many different communities that they come as a fully formed community and say, we're coming on our own. So that's a hard list to go to the question on some issues. We'll see on lots of issues it's not a relevant issue. It's not relevant, it's not a concern. But on some issues, I think it becomes a hard question. Another part of the tshuva, let's move away from that issue. He's got a couple of other opinions there, but it's a kind of, that's a complicated set of questions about how and whether one is allowed to have certain but they did in a city, and it's not clear to me that today's we follow all those standards and we understand all that's going on. I think a lot of people just assume, well, you want to set up a Beit Din, set up a Beit Din. And that's how the Rav Kook is seeing it. But the next issue that he raises is, he says, it's possible, however, and this is a big loophole that I think is where people find their way to allow themselves to have independent and separate Bate Din. You could see that Lotit Godu, he says, he thinks that Lotit Godu only applies b'davar chiyuvi, in a matter that's an absolute obligation. So example, he uses a Ner Chanukah example. Everybody agrees that when it comes to Ner Chanukah, that you have to have at least one candle in per house. So that everybody agrees. That's where Lotit Godu would apply. But if there's an ofan, if there's a way that people have some kind of an addition that they think of as a hider, and they're gonna have you're gonna have different versions of hidur. So some people have, you know, one candle the first night, two candles the second night, three candles the third night for everybody in the family, and some people have not one big menorah, and it'll be one candle the first night, two candles, or we'll have a number of candles for the one candle per household member the first night, two second, whatever the standard of hidur is, there are different versions of it. You could say, Rav Kook says, that you can do any hidur the way you want to, because that's not an issue of halacha, and therefore the fact that different Jews choose to be mahadir Hashem in different ways, that's not going to be an issue. Now there are places where that makes perfect sense, right? Let's say you're going to talk about the good, the Jews shouldn't be different than each other. Does that mean that everybody has to have the same talis bag? So if one Jew thinks that a nice blue, dark blue velvet talis bag is the way to go, another Jew likes a brown leather talis bag as his hidur, as his way of having a beautiful mitzvah, would anybody think that there's loaded go-to issue there? Of course, there's obviously no loaded go-to issue because there's no halachic content to that. There's no issue. It's just different ways that Jews are beautifying their observance. When it comes to Hanukkah, getting a little bit more halachic now, however, because the Gemara does talk about here's the way to do it, and here's a mehudar way, here's a better way, and here's the even more mehudar way. Whatever the understanding of those words is, I could have imagined somebody saying that's a loaded go-to issue because there's a halachic standard of what hidur is. But Rav Kook is not taking it that way. Rav Kook is saying that when it comes to hidur, people do what they want. He gives another example that there's a Mishnah where Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua were in a place where the people in general shook their lulav and etrog during the course of Hallel many, many times in the course of Hallel, and they, these two rabbis, only shook it for the words Ana Hashem Hoshiana. So if they're not going to shake with their lulav with the other people, you might have thought that's a good new issue. So Rav Kook says, no, you see, Nianua Bahalel, attaching a shaking of the lulav to Hallel, that's a hider. That's only a way of beautifying the observance of the mitzvah. It's the only way of beautifying observance of mitzvah. There's no problem what to go do there. And he goes on, here's a Yushami discussion that I want to get into right now. But he goes on to say that if you have a situation, any situation, this is a even more far-reaching, any situation where if I do it X way, I'll be yotze, even according to the other opinion, b'di'avad, then we're arguing about hidur. We're talking about the best way, no longer about the basic way. And as soon as we're talking about the best way, Rav Kook thinks that's not allowed to go to the issue. Now, in terms of, I'm going to just pause and point out that in terms of if loads go to is about Jews shouldn't be acting differently from each other, you shouldn't be creating separations among the Jewish people, within the Jewish people, it's a particularly legalistic way of looking at it to say that only applies to strict halachic questions, meaning, you know, that means there are all sorts of issues that come up that people in the street would look at and say, that's a different religion. That would say, Mamash is a different religion. And we can say, is that allowed to go to do a shiur at all? I don't have to worry about it at all. Because since it doesn't touch on specific and significant halachic issues, it's not a concern allowed to go to do. I am not in any way arguing the halachic answer that he's giving. I'm just pointing out that it turns allowed to go to do into a strange thing. Not strange in the sense that it allows for a lot more variation among Jews than the simplest meaning of lo tgodu would seem to be. You're telling me you can't have two courts, Rav Kook is saying basically, that according to many opinions, you can't have two courts in a city if they're going to rule differently from each other, because on rulings, lo tgodu is a big issue, but they can do so many things differently than each other that casual observers would look at them and think of them they're not even in the same religion whatsoever, and that'll be fine. Same thing, he says, would apply to a minhag. Anything that's a matter of minhag, that's not a lo tgodu issue. Which makes sense in our times, because it shows you how Sephardim and Ashkenazim became so different, because much of what separates us is just a matter of a matter of minhag, a matter of various customs, and those customs look very different, but in terms of halachic content, they don't have very much difference. Now, you know, that's great for people who are versed in halacha, understand the situation, understand the stakes of various questions that come up, and maybe that's what Rav Kook saying, and people should be more alert to the reality of these situations, and maybe he's right. But it leads to this very interesting situation where you can have lots and lots of variation among Jews, and you can have a prohibition in the Torah that's understood to mean Jews shouldn't be that separate from each other, and yet it won't bother us whatsoever. Now, the Magen Avraham does seem to think that differences of minhag within a town are a problem of lo tidko to do. Rav Kook is not clear as to why the Magen Avraham thought that. He thinks the Magen Avraham thought that because he didn't want there to be different minhagim in the town. And he says, but you don't have to go to lo tidko to do for that. You could just say that it's because of a problem of you shouldn't act differently than other people because it leads to the machloket is often thought of as being dispute. I sometimes wonder whether it might just mean that at least the differentiation, and we don't want Jews being differentiated. We don't want Jews functioning differently than each other. Something similar to Lord Gudru, except that at a different level, at a rabbinic level rather than a biblical level. And he says that might even apply. He thinks that might even apply. When we say Aisha, that a man shouldn't, the principle of Gemara is a person shouldn't act differently than other people because it will lead to machloket. We usually think that means act differently in an active way, but if he just refrains from doing something, then you think that maybe that's not a problem and therefore that's not an issue because you say, well, maybe he just doesn't want to do that for whatever reason. But if Cook is saying, even if you have a group of people who are not going to do X or Y or Z, he thinks that would qualify not for Lord Gudru necessarily because it's a minute question, but it would qualify as a problem because even though it's that you're not doing, meaning if you have a whole shul of people where in Eretz Yisrael, say nobody wears tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So that's not a good example. But let's say you're living in America in a place where some people wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, some people don't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So that's a custom issue. So you think that's not going to be a loaded gonadim issue, right? But there could be Aisha and Adam and Machloket issue. It's going to that it leads to strife. Now, nowadays, a lot of people say, well, it won't lead to strife because we won't fight about it. I don't think that's a great answer. I think the Gemara thought you should fight about it, but it might also be the Gemara just meant we don't want people getting used to doing different things from each other and just getting used to the idea that different Jews do different things. And in case, that's all the loaded gonadim Aisha and Adam and Machloket side of that question. So far we have this idea of Lo Tegodru. We have the question of whether Batidin can differentiate from each other based on certain talents or standards they have. The Rambam seems to think no. Rambam and Ramban seem to think no. But that question of not having differences among the Jewish people, not having different courts and rulings on different things, that's certainly, it's clearly for halakhic issues, real rulings. And it's clearly not for Hidurim, for things that are just added qualities that we want to put into our observance, and then according to everybody other than Magen Avraham, it's not for custom as well. Magen Avraham thinks for custom. Rav Kook thinks that Magen Avraham really should have meant not that it's the Lotit Gonadu issue, but that it's an Aish and Adam Yeh Machloket issue. But that's not the way that the Magen Avraham actually said it, and therefore that's the way you have that. So that's the end of that discussion of how far Lotit Gonadu goes. Then there's also a discussion of what seems like a fairly technical issue, but I think it's worth every so often dabbling into fairly technical issues. But the underlying principle of the technical issue that we have to get to is something called a lav shebichlalut. So a lav shebichlalut is where one lav in the Torah, one prohibition in the Torah, covers several different actions. And the definition is different is part of the problem here. So a good example of a lav shebichlalut, the one that always comes to my mind, is the Torah says, lo tochlo adam, you shouldn't eat with the blood or on the blood, and there's no malkut for that. The issue of a lav shebichlalut is that a court will not give lashes for violating that lav in any of its form, because since it has several forms that it takes, it covers several different things, it's a lav shebichlalut, and there's no malkut. That's a halakhic principle. So lo tochol al adam is understood in several different ways. It's understood in terms of korbanot, in terms of eating before davening, in terms of sort of preparing meat to be eaten. There's a very few different issues that come up within that one prohibition. That's called a lav shebichlalut. So this Rav Ferber had written to Rav Kook that lo tetgodu would seem to be a lav shebichlalut. Why? Because it covers two very different things. It covers the prohibition of tearing at one's skin in mourning over a relative, over a person who passed away. And it covers this whole issue that we've been talking about now. The Jewish people are supposed to stay together. Now, at the beginning of the Shiur, I tried to give a loose understanding of how they could in any way come together. But still, there seem to be very different prohibitions. And therefore, it seemed to be that this one prohibition covers very different things, and that should make it a lav shebichlalut, and therefore there shouldn't be lashes for any of the lavin, any of the prohibitions covered by this verse. However, the halacha actually is that if somebody tears at their skin after getting warned, and they're told, you know, that's a violation of the Torah, and you're going to get lashes for it, and they say, I don't care, and they do it anyway, they get lashes. So how can they get lashes? That's a lav shebichlalut. So this referber had suggested that the Torah, it starts that pasuk by saying, "Banim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem," you are children of Hashem, and therefore lo tetgodu. So how would you understand the pasuk? It would mean something like it's inappropriate or it's improper that children of Hashem, in that sense of "Banim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem," should hurt themselves in such a way that they get the tears in their skin over losing a good friend or a relative, or that children of Hashem should not be a community that's so divided that you have different versions of that community within the community. So that's what he had suggested. But Rav Kook says, the fact that they have a connected reason never anywhere else in halacha stop something from being a lav shebichlud. Lav shebichlud is a standard. It is a issue that is just an issue of how the Torah expressed various lavin. So if you look at the prohibitions that apply to a nazir, so they all have the same reason to them, but they're separate prohibitions. So too, when the Torah says lo tochal menu na umevushal, when it comes to the korban pesach, you can't eat it raw, you can't eat it cooked. Those are different things. So it's one reason. So the fact that something is one reason doesn't mean they're not different things. Now those kids, it's not a lav shebichlud because they're different psukim. I think they're different words of the pasuk. Or so Rav Kook says, a lav shebichlud, even though it's got the same reason, it's still a lav shebichlud. So why is it that lo tigodudu is not considered a lav shebichlud? Why is it that somebody can actually get lashes for tearing at one's skin? So Rav Kook suggests that the only time it's considered a lav shebichlalut is when it's one word that covers several different things in it. But if you have different words, so no mevushal, like I just said a second ago, that's not going to be a lav shebichlalut, right? Because it's got different words. Once it has different words, not a lav shebichlalut. In addition, he says that even if you link the two words together with a letter of some sort, it's still not going to be a lav shebichlalut. I'm sorry. Even if they are separated by a letter, that's going to be enough to make them an alav shebichlalut. And when it comes to lo tigodudu, he says, really, the drasha comes from the fact that, and if you look at the Gemara, if it just said lo tagodu, if it left out that second dalet, or the tough in the dalet, then it would have meant don't tear at your skin. Once it's lo tigodudu, it means two things. So that second dalet, that extra dalet teaching that halacha, for Rav Kook, that means it's no longer a lav shebichlalut, because it's if the Gemara said there's a word lo tagodu here and a word lo tigodu here, and those two lavin are separate lavin. Now, that's very clever, very interesting. It's not fully convincing to me, because that's stretching the idea of what a pasuk covers. But that's Rav Kook's basic stand is, that to be a lav shebichlalut, it has to be the same idea, comes from the exact same word. So lo tochol al adam, you shouldn't eat over blood, and the Gemara just darshens it a lot of different ways. That's a lav shebichlalut. But here, lo tigodu, it's not. It's really basically the prohibition of tearing at one's skin would be the prohibition of lo tagodu, Rav Kook is saying. And then the issue of communities and how Jews observe the Torah, that's lo titgodu, and that's why it's going to be not a lav shebichlalut. So if that's true, and we just proved that this is a lav that should be able to get malkot, why aren't there malkot for lo tigodu? Why aren't there malkot for Jews acting in different ways from each other and having different groups within the Jewish community? So the Rav Barber had suggested that it's because it takes two people to do it. So Cook says, that's an odd idea. The idea that in two people do an action together, there can't be malkot, or it can't be a punishment, that's an Hilchos Shabbos idea. That's an idea we get from the laws of Shabbat, but that's a particular idea of laws of Shabbat because of issues of Melechet Machshevet and how they do Melacha and how they do creative labor and how they change the world in ways that are not to be changed on Shabbat. So that's where you have a prohibition or an issue of Shnaim She'asa'ua. You have an issue that if two people do something together that one person could have done, it's not a full violation of Shabbat in the sense of getting punishment. But there are plenty of prohibitions that take two people to do, and yet they both get punished. So Rav Kook says, for example, any of the sexual prohibitions involves two people, you know, and yet they both get punished. So that can't be the issue here. It's not that it takes two people that makes it look good to do issue. So Rav Kook instead suggests, and he has another example of it elsewhere, when it comes to hora'ah b'shichrut, somebody paskins halacha, rules on halachic question, when they've drunk wine, when they've drunk intoxicating beverages, that's a prohibition. They should theoretically get malkot. It's part of a prohibition of avodah b'shichrut, of serving the Beit HaMikdash when one is inebriated, and yet one doesn't. So why not? So Rav Kook says, if you look at the Minchas Chinuch, Minchas Chinuch suggests that it's because it's a lav she'ein bo ma'aseh. It's a prohibition where there's no action. So you'll say, well, the action is he said a ruling. So saying something in halacha is most times not considered a halachic action. There are cases where speech is considered a halachic action for various purposes, but in general, it's not. So here too, Rav Kook says, and this takes us back to the beginning of the tshuva, the prohibition, lo tigodu, starts with a hora'ah. It starts with ruling differently than another court, than the majority court had ruled, and that's the issue. And therefore, it's considered a lav she'ein bo ma'aseh. So he suggests, and that's why you're not going to have a prohibition, but you're not going to have malkot for violating this prohibition. So after all that, he says, so what we're establishing here, whatever Cook was doing, I think he was doing something on the other side of London, whatever we're doing here, or maybe he was doing part of the west end of London, this referber was unconcerned about it, uncomfortable with it. What we're doing here is just, we're making a vod. So we even use that word, a vod. A vod is not a Beit Din, it's not a court, it's a group. And we're making a group, and we don't have any idea that we're going to have other rulings, or other ra'ot, other problems, other issues. We're not separating ourselves in this thing. And therefore, there's no problem. He thinks there should be no problem with us doing this. That is a responsible day for the 29th of Shvat, Rav Cook in London, establishing a new rabbinical court or a new community, but establishing a new vod and explaining why that's not a prohibition, not a violation of the prohibition of lotud. With thanks to the OU of Torah by Jacob Roberts, David Hochhauser, I bid you a good day.